For May the 23rd, 2014, we talk about YouTube possibly buying Twitch, Dead Space 2 about 3 years too late, and we ask you about your mobile remake wish list. Welcome to the 60-second level. All right, let's get rolling.
Rolling.
Ball with the ball. What dang it, dang.
How many Last Limp Resort Bizkit references can we put in the show?
I don't know. I'm not even sure if that is going to be in the intro or not, but let's just roll right into it. 3, 2, 1. Hey, guys, welcome to episode of The Level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
And my name is Ben Merkel.
Yes, and you are listening to level number 62. Thank you so much, everybody, for sticking around. As you heard, Dennis is not able to join us today. He is still out in sunny California, and we wish him all the best. But we soldier on, damn it. Well, also sorely missing his presence, but he will be back soon. Yeah, I don't know that I have any, like, pithy little thing at the beginning, except to say, is it, like, busy in here?
What do you mean?
How's your guys' like workload? Are you crazy overloaded?
It's funny you should mention that. I am, but I just write everything down that I need to do, get up, and walk away.
Oh.
So that's how I deal with that.
We call that GTD.
What's that stand for?
Getting things done.
Oh.
An actual thing that I practice. Yeah. No. How about you, David?
I'm in a weird situation because, like, yes, I'm a combination of, like, doing my research, trying to, you know, learn some things I need to learn, and actually get things organized from neglecting them all school year.
Of course.
On the other hand, I'm no longer in the school year, so I don't actually have a schedule whatsoever.
Right.
So I'm in this weird combination of, like, incredibly busy and not busy at all.
Right.
So you have to appreciate your schedule so much, having worked for like 2 or 3 years, right? Where
yes,
it's like,
yes,
yeah, mm-hmm.
I know. It's a really weird thing, and you know, you guys can probably you know this because you've done both. Whatever. That's a weird preface. It's really weird the way in which it's like I'm busier now that I'm back in college. But at the same time, like, I have a lot more free time or, you know, does that make any sense?
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, like discretionary time, you probably have more things to fill that discretionary time with. Like, you know, like just in terms of like stuff you have to make sure eventually gets done. Yeah.
Right. Well, I guess what it is the nice thing about like working is you're off. Well, most of the time, you're off at 5, and, like, you know you have X number of hours in the evening, you know, every evening or whatever, versus in college, like, I'm never off, but at the same time, that also means I can kind of take off whenever I want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that runs into, like, what my position is. I love my job. But it is not the standard working environment insofar as, like, because everything is kind of, like, upsy-downsy. And, you, yes, as the British say, upsy-downsy. you know, and there's no real start or end time. It's just kind of, like, everywhere. And that combined with the podcast stuff, it's like, oh, the worst thing for these podcasts would be if I ever got a girlfriend. It's like, wait a minute, something's got to give, as Jack Nicholson says in that one movie with Diane Keaton.
It's always great when movies say what the title is.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No. So that's very much been my situation. It's just like, what the fuck is happening? So I guess that's my preview of saying I don't have much to talk about on the grind.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Which is, that's what we do. We talk about video games here. Because why not? Yeah, that's what you're here for, right? Oh, well. But we're gonna have the usual show here today. We're going to start out with a little bit of news. Go to a question about iOS ports, which ones you want to see, and then round it out with a tight little grind. So why don't we hop right to it? I'm so sorry that I said the words tight little grind.
Why? I mean, obviously it doesn't sound good, but...
for that reason, for the obvious reason. If you're looking for why is Cole blank, just look for the obvious reason. Yeah. Oh, well. But now it's time for The Brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world. This is our news segment, and I'm going to lead off with the biggest story this week, I believe, which is a rumor. It's a rumor. It's not substantiated yet, but and by the time you're listening to this, it may be entirely out of date. So marvel at us, at we ignorant past people. But there is a notice, an alert, a rumor. Somebody blew the whistle. Somebody screwed the pooch, saying, "Yeah, YouTube gone by Twitch." So
that's actually exactly what they said.
YouTube gone by Twitch.
Well,
yeah, yeah. So it hasn't been confirmed. In fact, there is a conflicting report from the Wall Street Journal that says that the negotiations are in early stage. So, like, somebody came out and said, "This is happening tomorrow," and then, you know, the journal, as we call it, right? At the journal, the street, really, on you know, in the corridors of power, are saying, "Yeah, it's happening." A while from now, if ever at all. This kind of stuff happens all the time. Big companies talk to each other about how much they can buy each other out for to make sure that the rich stay rich. However, the amount that was being bandied about actually seemed crazy low. Okay?
What is it?
Yeah, Variety claims that the deal was going to go down for $1 billion. Which, $1 billion. So back in 2006, Google paid $1.65 billion for YouTube itself. But like, what was the thing that just got bought for like 12? Oculus got bought for $20 billion. I don't know.
Oh. So Facebook just has more discretionary income,
possibly. But here's the thing. I have no idea. Here's the thing. Like, there was a story a while back that Twitch is like the number one source of streaming traffic in the entire world, something like that. Like, there was a ranking of Twitch is so popular, you guys.
But the question is how monetized is it?
I mean, not very, but like, something not being monetized hasn't really gotten in the way of it being worth a bunch of money.
It's gone in the way of people actually making money. I mean, that's what basically happened with Facebook.
I mean, what...
You know, people spent lots and lots of money on it and then didn't make money.
Okay, so somebody being willing to pay for something doesn't immediately link to that thing being worth money.
Oh, no, I'm
talking about asshole investors.
Assuming this is the truth, maybe that's why it's so low, is people are realizing that it may not be, even if it's popular, doesn't mean it's easy to monetize. So maybe it's not actually worth that much, even though it's popular.
But I think that being the case would signal such a huge shift in the way that people value things on the internet. Because in the grossest possible way, when a company makes a deal like this, they're not buying a thing, they're buying eyeballs, right? You know, they're Dr. Frankenstein out there plopping them globes, right? So like, exactly. So let me get this straight. You just don't get me started, man. Don't even start.
And I think this is a point that we meant earlier when they were talking about Oculus, where they can also be buying it to hedge their competition, you know?
True.
So to prevent that from being more cool than their own thing.
Yeah.
And that would then make sense for YouTube to be doing this.
Oh, definitely. Yes. I mean, like, and YouTube has all of the back end necessary to monetize their brand.
I'm honestly like not saying this to be snarky, but Twitch, like, in my, like, mental categorization, always kind of resided in, like, YouTube for people who are too lazy to upload to YouTube.
I mean, it sticks
what
around.
What actually is Twitch that YouTube isn't?
That's pretty great. I mean, just the fact, like, you know, YouTube does do, like, streaming kind of things, but Twitch being specifically for games means that people can, like, follow you. So I've done a couple of streams for, you know, just in general, like, playing some Dark Souls for people, and, like, it's actually kind of fun, like, to be, you know, to be the person who's doing the streaming, like, sitting there playing the game, talking into a microphone,
yeah,
and, like, people pop in and chat. And so, like those are genuinely a pretty good time. And if I could get my computer to work better to stream it, I have no idea why Stream isn't cooperating, or why Twitch isn't cooperating with me. It might just be my internet. I have no idea. I would do it a lot more often because, like, it's a nice little participatory thing. Even though I personally don't really care for watching people's streams, like, that isn't a knock against anybody's streams, but, like, I don't have time to breathe, sure, let alone, like, I'd rather play Dark Souls myself than watch you play Dark Souls, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, it is a fun little participatory activity. And so,
sure, I guess,
like, they could be buying the culture, honestly.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I tend to not, like, keep up on things, so when I see those things, it's when they're old and on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I guess, if you were, like, going for the real-time stuff, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah. I can see why that would be popular.
Yeah. And there are people who, like, you know, when I start a stream, people get a little alert that says, oh, you know, Duckfeed TV is starting a stream. And then
hashtag
they see,
Colo.
Oh. Yes, hashtag Colo. Yes, that is where the Colo meme came from. But then they see, oh, he's streaming Rocksmith. And it's like, oh, it's just a black screen and no sound. What's happening? Oh, Cole's trying to get his shit figured out, but there's no way to do it in a safe environment. So I'm just getting a push notification. Let's unsubscribe from Cole.
Little do they know, Cole is actually playing Rocksmith and the song is 4:33.
It's 4:33 as covered by Metallica on the Black Album. So, yeah. So I don't know. So the pithy little toot that I made about this earlier this week was, it seems kind of bizarre that YouTube is in such kind of, like, hot water. They're between a rock and a hard place. Other cliche with DMCA copyright takedowns and their kind of automatic filtering going after anybody who posts Let's Plays.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And taking that down. Like, it's a huge thing. Like, people are having their ad revenue seized by Nintendo specifically, and some other companies, I think, or just their shit outright taken down. And, you know, YouTube's flagging and filtering system is really unforgiving for that just because of these crazy crackdowns. And so if YouTube went through this, like, that would have to signal a huge change in their policy about that kind of stuff. Because,
well, yeah. Or the end of Twitch.
I mean, yeah, like, just kind of like, oh, you have all these viewers? Not anymore, suckers! Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess we don't need to get on that, but that's, yeah, and that's a weird thing for them to do, because that's not unambiguously legal, or, well, I mean, I guess it's legal, but Let's Plays are not necessarily illegal.
You know,
it's not like them taking down, like, there's YouTube things that are just like, hey, I'm going to upload this music album so you can listen to it.
Yeah.
That's pretty blatant. Let's Plays are not necessarily, it's not necessarily clear whether they're
fair. What the fuck has happened to our society? 20 years ago, it was skateboarding is not a crime. Now it's Let's Playing is not a crime.
Let's Play.
Also, 20 years ago, I was 7, so... man, you're right. Like, you know, it is kind of in a little gray area. Like, they exist, but, you know, you can make as many arguments as you want about, like, oh, this is, like, a derivative piece. It's commentary. Like, you know, but there's also the argument, like, yeah, you are actually, like, somebody composed that music that's in there. Somebody made that art asset. Like, what now? And, you know, game creators have by and large come out, at least the most vocal ones have come out and said, yeah, no, these Let's Plays are great. They get, you know, they get my shit publicity. You know?
Oh, yeah. I often, before I get a game, like, watch a Let's Play to be like, hey, does this look like a game I want to play?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. I think it's a little bit like the, I don't want this to be like the podcast about, like, free as in beer, but But yeah, I think it's a little bit like some of the music stuff where, you know, they eventually found that a lot of these things actually made them more money than they lost.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen a compelling argument for them saying, hey, we're going to lose money on this. But, you know, I'm not a person who makes video games. Like, I'm coming at this from a person who creates derivative content. Like, you know, on Watch Out for Fireballs and Bonfireside Chat. Like, if From decided, like, hey, it's not cool that you use our dialogue or our music, like, as a way to, like, oh, supplement the material that you're talking about, we would totally have to, like, re-edit all those episodes. And that would fucking suck. But it would totally be the thing that we have to do, you know, because that's the way the internet works. But I would, you know, again, the argument is there, both sides. What we're doing is taking this thing and commenting on it, using that to drive people to play these games and talk about them. But there's also like, oh, like that is actually ours and you can't use it. And technically it might be piracy. I have no idea. But like, yeah. Bleh. So I don't know how I feel about Twitch buying or YouTube buying Twitch. Like, if it gives them better infrastructure, all the better, cool. If it means that everybody has to like sign up for bullshit accounts and it's even more monetized, like I have no idea. Like, pre-rolls are the devil. Like, but Twitch already has pre-rolls, so maybe they're going to get better ones. I have no idea. Bleh.
I saw, you know, the while back that the Twitch plays Pokemon, and that was kind of the big thing.
The thing we talked about 7 episodes in a
yes.
row, and so did every other podcast. Yeah,
I saw the other day you know, someone had taken a Oculus Rift, whatever you're oculizing.
Oculus Rift. He's one of my favorite co-hosts.
Someone had taken a Oculus thingy on a roller coaster. So I want to call it now that the next Twitch plays is going to be Roller Coaster Plays Oculus Rift.
It's plays all the way down, man. Oh man, so that is that is my story. I don't know, more news happening possibly before you've even heard this. So, you know, just. Okay, here's what you have to do. Get our Patreon up to, like, let's say, $25,000 a month, and maybe we can just do episodes every day. Go ahead.
Twitch stream them?
Yeah, let's Twitch stream constantly.
Twitch plays the level.
Yeah, Twitch plays the level.
And tell us what to say.
Yep. Oh, God. That would be so awful. Oh, man. David, how about you? What up?
Yeah, I've been playing like the last like 10 podcasts. I think my grind has been Fallen London.
Yep.
So they just released on the 13th. So what was that about?
About a week ago.
Because I'm apparently behind the curve. They released their new game Sunless Sea to Steam Greenlight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's set in the same world, but I think we might have discussed it some, but it's kind of a, real-time steampunk, take on, FTL.
Right. So you're on, like, a ship, except it's a steam ship. There's no sun. Yeah.
Right, because it takes place basically in the Underdark. And it looks really cool, really great music. The, something that's kind of cool is, it's this huge, I don't know how you give like dimensions on a fake world map, but it's, you know, this massive under, you know, ocean that's all hand drawn. So the entire map is hand drawn. But yeah, so, that looks really, really exciting. So maybe check that out on Greenlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I have no idea how Greenlight works for publishers. Like, it's, I don't know.
As far as I can understand it, it's basically some kind of lottery where, like, periodically Steam greenlights the top, say, like, 20 games that have the most votes.
From my experience, it's more like 100 to 200. It's like you'll see on like the BitPulse or on just on, you know, less crowdfunding focused websites. Like, yeah, Steam just added 100 games to this. Like, wait a minute, like, wasn't Greenlight supposed to be like, if you reach a certain threshold, it'll go?
I thought it was ranking. Maybe it's threshold. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah. They've changed it a couple times. I know that Steam has come out and said, like, yeah, it's a flawed system. We're just kind of rolling with the punches here. Like, but what's important is that the games that people want get out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of their attempt to kind of crowdsource quality control to a certain degree, I think.
Yeah.
Because one of the big things is once you've had one game greenlighted, you then don't have to go through the process again. So if you look at, like, most of the stories that are, like, pretty much any of the stories that are a game gets pulled from Steam, what happened is a developer released some legitimate game and then released some crap game, and the second one didn't have to be greenlit.
Oh, yeah, so they're using that as, like, a Trojan horse.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. You know, most of them, it was maybe not intentional. The other big thing that's kind of a little questionable is it can sort of mess with the market of, like, hey, if you get an actual publisher, since they already have a game on Steam, you don't have to be greenlit.
Mm-hmm.
So it can sort of mess with that. Or there's been a couple of instances where, like, things have happened, like someone's gone a publisher, so they get kicked out of Greenlight, and then the publishers decide not to do it, and so they're just screwed. There's a bunch of just weird things that have happened, but, you know, like you said, it's kind of a flawed system.
Yeah. What's weird is, like, there are relatively high-profile games that have had to go through Greenlight, like the Deadly Premonition port had to go through Greenlight. Like, what is it?
Even after it was released to consoles?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, just we're talking, like, 3-4 years after it was console. Like, it just came out, like, last Halloween, so, like, 3 years after it was put out on console. So I would think that wouldn't have to go through that. Like, Ignition is kind of a big... Is Ignition... I don't even know. I don't think Ignition is still around anymore, but that seems like one that would be put around. But, like, Dragon's Lair, the remake for Steam, was Greenlight. It's just real bizarre to me that, like, stuff that is ostensibly not indie is put under that label. But who knows what indie means anymore, though.
Yeah, I feel like, though, sometimes just it's a interesting thing to, like, see where the actual indie game scene is. Just, like, look at, you know, browse through some of the green lights, and it's basically, like, indie buzzword salad.
Examples.
Pretty much anything, you know, roguelike voxel zombie shooter.
Dark Souls, Zelda, Dark Souls.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's pretty much, like, if you think of, like, the, you know, there's a couple of, you know, popular genres right now. Actually, the three ones that kind of stick in my mind tend to be, you know, voxel games, zombie shooters, and roguelikes. You'll just see tons of them. And it's just, you know, it's just every minor, like, variant on that rule set you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Which seems bizarre, because procedural generation is really tough to do, so they're just going to run with it, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, you also get things, though, where it'll be like, you know, Minecraft, except in space. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, all that stuff, so.
Okay. Yeah, so Sunless Sea is on Steam Greenlight. If people like that kind of online participatory IF, go for it. I don't even know if it's technically IF.
IF?
Interactive fiction.
Eh, close enough.
Yeah. I think that people who like IF understand that there is such a specific definition of it that me calling anything that is not IF IF will make them very angry. So that is me hedging my bets. Oh, man. Ben, what up?
So mine's like a super small story, but it was something I saw like in the last week or two that was cute. So I thought I would bring it up. And I didn't know it at the time, but maybe everybody already knows this and I'm dumb. But it was just the fact that the cover of Super Mario Brothers 1 depicts Mario dying. So if you click on the link to the story, I mean, you can read the article if you want, but basically the picture shows it all where it shows a picture of the cover, shows where that would actually be, and shows the fact that Mario would be dying in that situation. So
yeah, so I was about ready to say, well, not necessarily. You could just be jumping up against a brick and firing this, but no, there's like lava right underneath them. So
yeah.
Huh. So, yeah. You do. So basically, what we're saying is this was like the original like Dark Souls, you know, prepare to die thing.
Mario will die. Yeah.
There will be coins. I guess there.
That's Sonic.
Yeah, it would be Sonic. Exactly. Oh, man. I realized what I did the second that I said it, but you corrected me before I could correct myself.
Wait, did I miss something?
Do I want to explain it, or do I just want to leave it?
It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't. When Sonic dies, he leaves a bunch of
loses his rings.
Yeah. So I said there will be coins, as though Mario getting injured made him lose his coins.
Oh,
but that is
okay.
Not
I didn't
the case.
Realize that's what. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And the joke is dead.
Yeah.
Jokes are always better when you explain them.
Facts.
Yeah. I like that. All this brings up for me, though, is like I really love those old NES game covers. They take it, and it's higher res, I think, than the actual art is. So this is like actual new assets, like designed on top of it. But just like to give you an idea, which I respect a lot better. I respect a lot more than
current games do that too, right?
It's actually not. It's actually false advertised. That's the game isn't actually 32 bits if you zoom into it.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, I mean, like more so. So, like, there are lots of covers that are like, here is an artist's rendition of what we think this game would look like if it was, you know, done all in its concept art. Sometimes
like
that feels
Mega Man
Mega Man, right? Yeah.
But so bad.
But like Nintendo saying, yeah, like here is what you're going to like actually be looking at. You know, on the box, this is what you're going to see in KB, KB Toys or whatever. And like, okay, cool. Like, I understand that. I would be so heartbroken. I would be so heartbroken if I emphasized things weird. If I picked up a game, it's like awesome. It's like, oh wait, it's like a bunch of blocks. I kind of knew that was going to happen because that's what the NES does. But yeah, but that's a fun little good.
Imagine if they did that same style of cover art on Atari games.
They did.
Really? Would it just end up being like abstract painting?
Oh, I thought you were going the other way, like where they took embellished it.
Oh no, I'm talking like actually had the screenshot
things
from the game for Atari games where your character is like a square.
This cover was made entirely with screenshots.
Yeah.
Monochrome.
100% in-game footage. Real-time renders. Yeah.
I sort of... well.
Yeah.
That's something I don't understand is the whole, made 100% in in-game footage. Like, my translation to that is the cutscenes are going to lag.
I don't know.
We had no budget for a trailer.
But I'd rather have that than like the Killzone 2, like, you know, what's the thing that the press calls that when they do it, a bull shot?
So this would be a good future question, but we should ask like what the best video game trailer would be.
I still love some of the live action trailers.
I'm not a fan of that because it feels like a commercial to me, honestly.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Although you have to admit the one for Hotel Miami was kind of creepy and cool.
Hotel Miami.
Hotel Miami? I'm sorry.
You mean Hotline Miami?
Yes. I was reading one of the news articles about was the hotel they're protesting against.
I was reading the lyrics to Hotel California, as I always
because that's that song is set in whatever hotel they're protesting. Huh. I don't know.
Weird.
So in my sleep-deprived mind, there actually was a reason that happened. Go on.
Continue. Yeah. No, this, like, the recreation of that scenario reminds me of, what was that comedian who determined what day Ice Cube was talking about?
Ooh, I haven't heard this, but this sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, so he had to think of days that were good.
Yes.
Days where Ice Cube did not use his AK.
Yeah. Yep. Days where it was where the smog was clear and some sports ball team won.
Where the Lakers beat the Supersonics.
Yeah. And so like he narrowed it down to like it was like January 20th to 24th on 1992.
I don't know. Did Ice Cube hit a triple double that day?
Maybe. What is
a
triple double?
Did he get his scrub on, but didn't pig out?
I'm sure. Oh man, like so this is something rare where my encyclopedic knowledge of the piece of trivia is outstripped by your encyclopedic knowledge of the primary text.
Doesn't happen often. I know I have a soft spot in my heart for that song, so
it's a good song. Because it was
also
a good day.
I love that we're referring to this as primary text.
Multiplayer.
So it's time for the multiplayer, where we ask you things that are happening in this world. Now, usually Dennis puts these up, but unlike last week, Dennis was not breaking from his vacation to do his this week. So I had to put one up, and I put up a prompt that neither of you two would really be apt to go for, because you are some of the least mobile gaming people I know of. So.
Yes, I'm going to have to request to read Robert Noakes when we get to that. Not that there's anything behind why I might want to do that, but...
Yes, okay, so I will note your request, but I will also actually read the response here, which is, what game would benefit most from a mobile/iPhone/iPad re-release? So, there are plenty of games... Pretty good. That would actually do well for a mobile re-release. Things that have like benefited from that. There's FTL primarily is the one that kind of inspired that for me, having played that a lot recently. And yeah, so I wanted to put that out to the community here. Let's see here, Ben. What's Murph say?
Murph says I've got deep nostalgia spot in my brain for Space Quest. Space Quest 1.
Yeah.
Space Quest 1. And Sam and Max Hit the Road, both of which would be perfect for mobile. Also, Sim Earth, because using a monolith to make intelligent dinosaurs is pretty badass.
True.
Yes.
True. I never spent enough time with Sim Earth. Like, I played a lot of Sim City in my day, back in the school labs and at, like, friends' houses who had PCs and such. But there was this glut. Like, to me, Sim Earth was kind of like... lumped in with like Sim Copter and Sim Ant and Sim Tower. Like there was just like this like Rock Band Guitar Hero-esque glut of Sim games, and like Sim Earth is the one that seems to be the most positively regarded, but I totally missed out because I like discounted it.
I actually play around with it a good deal. It was weird in that probably of any of them, I mean, definitely of any of them that weren't SimCity, it was, like, very legitimately, like, for the most part, you know, trying to be science-based and, like, actually teach you something and actually simulate something.
Right.
So, yeah, so, I mean, it's... But I don't know how well it would hold up, like, going back and playing it simply because you could make... so much more, but like it very much tried to be a pretty realistic simulator of like evolution and like you know, some very basic like planetary, you know, dynamics, stuff like that.
I have a question for Murph. I would like to know if the T-Rexes would be able to touch the monolith or not.
The real question is how they pick up the bone to beat down all the other T-Rexes.
No, the real question is can they open doors? Otherwise, we're fucked. And the real question is can they swim backwards?
What?
Can... What?
Oh, okay.
All right, there we go. Took it a second.
Took me a sec. But yeah, no, Space Quest, yeah, that also... That was one of those games I only ever watched other people play. So, like, I have very positive memory of it, despite having never actually played it and having very little idea of what actually happened as opposed to, like, what I imagine happened from what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, that I could definitely see, like, old-school adventure gaming being good on mobile devices, especially because when I'm like in the middle of this of a supermarket and I realize, oh, I need to combine the bananas with the tin can in order to trap the monkey to use as bait for the guard, I can then do it.
Yeah, it's I mean, and the idea of like old school adventure gaming being worthwhile thing, like, was born out relatively early on. Like, when did the Monkey Island remakes come out on you know, on iOS? Like, those are fucking great.
Yeah. What was it real recently I saw some like celebrity or someone like reference Monkey Island, and it was one of those things where it's like, wait, you've played that? It's like that, or like a professional football. Like, it's just someone that like wouldn't stereotypically like be all about that.
Were they referencing Monkey Island or On Stranger Tides? Because they are practically indistinguishable from a textual standpoint.
Huh?
I don't know. On Stranger Tides? No, I mean, like, okay, so there's the Pirates movie that was that was based on Stranger Tides. But the actual book was what Monkey Island was based off of.
I have no idea.
Huh. I don't know. Yeah. But that is Murph. Thank you. Sam and Max would be great. I don't know. I need to check. Like, Telltale's been real spotty about putting out the you know, more recent remakes of certain games like that, like the Sam and Max episodes. I need to see if that is a thing, because even though I have them, I would rather play them on my iPad and rather not on my PC. But yeah, let's go here. I think I screwed you over, David, by putting Ben first, because there's no possible way for you to read Roberts. But I will take Dustin, and we will...
No!
Okay,
here's for it later, David.
Here's how we'll do, David. Why don't you read Dustin?
Sure, why not? Gunbound, is that by Nexon? Would be fun. Taking turns firing in the same style as Words with Friends. It already has a ranking, currency, and an upgrade system. It would be a great mobile multiplayer experience, even if you could buy into it, because just like in Worms, you could have better equipment and still lose to someone who was a pro with a ninja rope and bazooka. Is this basically a Worms, like a Worms style game, like an artillery shooter game?
I have no point of reference whatsoever.
A Worm-like?
Worm-like. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. I'm looking it up, by which I mean I actually know about this and am a responsible podcast host.
I have no idea.
Yes, it is a worm-like.
Hmm. Cool.
But yeah, no, I could actually see that that being a lot of fun, and I could see the kind of the Words with Friends thing. It particularly most of the. Like worm-like mobile games I've seen have been local co-op, mm-hmm. whereas I could see it being a lot better if it was non-local.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, like, there's a Worms game out for iOS, and it works fucking great.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But like that, is a game that seems uniquely suited to touch screens, and also it's an asymmetric multiplayer. So,
yeah.
Like, yeah, it's such a natural fit. Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, Gunbound looks pretty good. I did not know this was a thing.
What era is it from?
It looks pretty modern. I think it's maybe a free to play, but it's real cartoony. It looks like cartoony, kind of like people riding like tanks and like dinosaurs and stuff.
Yeah. Huh. Neat. So I will go ahead and take, let's see here, Phil, who says, I was a big fan of the older Romance of the Three Kingdoms games, and I think that the genre, especially the older console strategy games, would work really well on a tablet, specifically when a big chunk of your time is spent just managing your territories. Yeah, I think I had a period where I was real interested in the Romance of the Three Kingdoms kind of games, because, like, when I was real little, I rented a game called Nobunaga's Ambition for Genesis, which was one of those, like, again, it was very similar, like a turn-based, almost Civilization-esque kind of game set in, like, Japanese feudal times. But, like, I couldn't understand it, but I was really intrigued. It was like, if I was, like, maybe, like, 10 years older at the time that I rented this, I would totally be able to, you know, grasp this and really love it. But, Yeah.
Did you think that at the time?
No. Like, in hindsight, it's like, oh, I've read stuff about it in the past, and it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I could totally see that being, like, an interesting PC-like experience. And, like, the romance games are, you know, games that have kind of been in that same vein, you know, on consoles in the past. And, except I think more story-driven. And,
are they actually set on the based on the book?
Maybe. I think it's based on the actual historic events.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, any of those. Like, I was gonna, you know, submit like Master of Orion for mine, but there's a pretty good approximation of Master of Orion 2 on iOS anyway.
Is that a 4X game?
Yeah. It's kind of like the one that, like, originated the 4X moniker.
Okay.
Yeah. So, because you requested it, David, what's Robert say?
Robert says, a Kingdom of Loathing game that is designed from the ground up to be played on the phone or tablet. Yeah, I actually was thinking I was going to say, like, none, I would never play a mobile game until this one came up, and I would definitely play that.
Yeah, so here's my, you know, assertion about that. A, like, you know, you have an audience there, Robert, so shame on you. Second, or B, like what's stopping you? Because, like, I've straight up played Kingdom of Loathing on my iPhone and iPad. So.
You can definitely do it. It's just it's been a little while since I've done it, but some of the interface items don't necessarily work quite the way they should, because, you know, it makes use of, like, pop-ups and stuff like that. And also, you know, it would probably work well with just, like the basic interface, but there's actually they've put in a lot of more advanced, like, combat automation and, like, ways of interacting with that mm-hmm. make the game much easier to play, but probably would not work on a mobile device. Mm. So, like, yeah, definitely it is completely usable. You can play the game on mobile, but having something that was, you know, from the ground up.
Yeah, it's not the like optimal experience like that people have arrived at on the web browser.
Right. I would also like to see KOL Mafia integrated directly into it.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Yep. So I mean, was that yours? Like, do you have like a go-to one that you'd like to see on mobile?
Well, I would say also, like, within that, it would also be nice if, like, Fallen Lund actually worked right on mobile, but that's pretty much the exact same thing. I think mine actually would be Puzzle Pirates.
Hmm.
I don't know. Are you guys familiar with that at all? Or
I mean, I'm familiar with it. You've been telling me to play it for about 12 years now.
Yes, I am. And I will continue. This is apparently The Wire. But no, it's basically, you know, like you and a group of, say, like five people crew a pirate ship and go around, sail around the from island to island and like attack other ships and take their treasure. It's a MMO. Mm-hmm. With the catch being that like every task on the pirate ship is a puzzle game. So like bilging is the whole like shift blocks to line up three so they disappear game.
Yeah, like a match three.
Like patching up, doing repairs is the whole like you have different shaped blocks and you have to place them in such a way to fill in a hole.
Mm-hmm.
The most interesting one is sword fighting is basically Tetris attacks, kind of.
Yeah.
So it's basically, you know, it's an action. The things that make it cool, one, it's kind of cool using the puzzle games as abstraction. And the other thing is it's cool doing a kind of this ship game where you're not the ship, you're the people on the ship.
Yeah.
Really creates a sense of teamwork. Also, almost every player chooses to communicate in pirate speak, which is awesome.
They commit.
Yeah, like literally, like the standard when you get on a ship, everyone's ahoy, you know, the whole thing. Like it's got a really great community.
Hmm,
that sounds cool.
Yeah.
No, that's I remember selling a retail box copy of that, which seems real weird now.
Huh.
Hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. We're alive, damn it. Let's see here, Ben. How about you? Why don't you read what Joseph says? Because there is a certain amount of argument about what the word loathing means in the comments.
Are we skipping over Frederick?
Hmm? Oh, yeah. I said, why don't you read Frederick? Because he has a thing. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So Frederick Nook says, you do know what loathing means, right, Rob? Doesn't sound like a game anyone would want to play. Is there Worms 3D for mobile? Would be a must.
I'm actually not quite sure. Like, have they ever said why they call it Kingdom of Loathing?
Well, Robert says a couple comments down. Again, like I said, an argument about what the word loathing means. yes, he knows what loathing means. I think the canonical story is that Zach made the name up when he was drunk.
Oh, fair enough.
Which makes, I mean, like, it's a good name. It's stuck around. It's really good. I don't know. It's better than stuff I can think of when I'm drunk. But, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So that's the tone. God, I don't know. It feels weird talking about this game. Sorry. Oh, man. Hmm. But yeah, that is the reason. But yeah, Worms 3D. I don't know about Worms 3D. Like, side-scrolling, I know. It's pretty good. But,
I suppose, is Worms 3D, though, still turn-based? Because if it is, I wouldn't see any reason why it wouldn't work.
Hmm. I have no idea. I've never played Worms 3D. That kind of seems like a weird offshoot, like the Street Fighter, like, 3X Alpha or whatever it is. Yeah.
I've never played Worms 2D, so I'm out of my element here.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Like, it's, the best way to describe it, it's a turn-based strategy kind of game, except you have weapons that fire in arcs. So you take turns with your little worms firing on each other in this kind of, like, 2D Lemmings-esque environment.
Okay.
And, like, you just kind of, like, have your initial firing velocity. You know, like, mm-hmm. like the trajectory, rather, and like the arc that it follows, and the terrain destructs, and that terrain destruction is like really why I like Worms. a lot. That and so the goofy
kind of Tank Wars right now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Tank Wars, except also completely crazy weapons. So like suicide bomber, sheep, or
what?
Yeah,
is
like
that two
like,
different things or one thing?
That's one thing. Like, one of the weapons is like you toss out a sheep, and like it proceeds to like charge across the screen, and then when you click, it explodes.
Nice.
Or like the just a lot of crazy things like that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think they actually charge for it, so it might not be free to play adware crap. So. Let's go. Looking at this here, what am I looking at? Joseph says Clock Tower would be a good port. It was a point-and-click game anyway. Probably wouldn't hold the same fear and anticipation as the original, when I played it when it was first released, but it would definitely give it another go on my phone. Yeah, that would be pretty great. In fact, I think that there is a relative, dearth. What is the opposite of glut? Dearth. Yeah, there's a relative dearth of horror games on the iPhone, and so that would make a lot of sense. However, I don't know that Capcom would be too great. Like, they're not that awesome about porting stuff to the iPhone. Like, they've just done some really bad Mega Man ports, and they've not worked out as great as they possibly could. But yeah, like, Clock Tower would make perfect sense. God, you guys, I love the Clock Tower games.
See, I thought those games prominently featured you getting chased.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that, I mean, isn't that fairly Twitch-based?
I mean, a little bit, but, like, it's more about, like, choosing your path through the house and choosing which places you hide.
Okay.
Yeah. No, they're fantastic. Some of the, except for, like, Clock Tower 3, which gets a little bit anime-y for my taste. Like, you turn into a straight-up magical girl, you know? During the boss fights. Haunting Ground took it back to kind of the OG flavor just a little bit. Clock Tower 1, 2, and 3 are... not 3. I just said 2 wasn't good. Clock Tower 1 and then American 1 and then American 2 are fantastic just because of that ominous kind of sense. So, yeah, I would totally agree with that, Joseph. And just I'll throw in mine. I kind of like racked my mind over this because even though I came up with the question, it's kind of hard to think of things that I've played that are not immediately available on here. This one comes with a caveat, but I would love to have a Planescape game that was pretty much just a visual novel with like a little bit of like maybe incredibly automated combat. Like I wouldn't want it to be I wouldn't want it to be like the Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition where it's like, okay, you're just doing this combat, which is kind of not the point anyway. But if you're just exploring and talking to people, that would be a pretty, pretty good game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my answer. Bring Torment. And I think there's a possibility of that. I donated to the Kickstarter for Torment's Plains of Numenera or whatever, but I don't know if there's an iOS version of it or not. But
so what I'm hearing is that what we need is Torment and Loathing in iOS.
Yes, bring more. Bring more Torment and Loathing. Yeah.
No happiness in iOS.
None allowed, none whatsoever.
We can't stop here. This is iOS country.
Yeah. Oh, and Ben, why don't you round us out with Geolaw?
Yeah. Geolaw says, I was going to say Spin Doctor, which was a game I remember enjoying for the Mac, but I just learned that it actually already has been remade for iOS, so I might just go drop 99 cents on that.
And that's a thing that you find with this stuff, is that there is a version. Like, if you think a game has been gone forever... just check, and it's probably there.
Word.
How about you, Ben? You have any? You have an inkling of this, or?
Yeah, I think I might go the Murphy route and just pick a nostalgic one. I would go with Coder 1 and Coder 2. I would like to be able to play those games again.
I hate to say you're in luck because you don't have an iOS device, but Coder 1 I think is out on iPad.
Is it?
Yep.
Man,
it's like $10.
Man.
Yeah.
I really can't complain, but
no, because yeah, you know, oh, well. It's like whatever. It's like it's your platform. Like you, all of us have more games than we could ever play. So
that is not quite true for me. I usually complete what I purchase.
Oh, okay. So not everybody has my particular mental illness. Gotcha.
I have one. I have one game, 1.5 games at my house right now that I have not beaten.
1.5, really?
Well, I'm working on one right now, which we'll talk about momentarily.
Oh, segue. Shit. So let's get to that right quick. So thank you, everybody, for responding to this question.
Yep. Do we get the Tony Hawk had two-player mode?
Frederick, that seemed like a response to a thing that I didn't read. So,
all right.
Yeah. Oh, well. So Frederick says, yeah, Tony Hawk had two-player mode. That would be sweet throwback. That seemed apropos of nothing. It'd be pretty cool. I don't know. Maybe there's a Tony Hawk iOS game. Maybe. Ugh. Why'd you have to expose my fraudulentness?
That seems like a game that I'd be surprised if there wasn't some iOS game, whether it was actually good or not.
Oh, I mean, whether good or not doesn't really enter into the equation. Yeah. Well, I mean, let's see here. I can just do a cursory search on the App Store. Let's get this thing solved right away. I'm not pulling anything up. I thought that there was. Huh. That'd be really hard. I could see, just whatever developer took that on, just being like, oh, you have to, twist the iPad to make sure that you're balancing.
Like I said, whether it's good or not.
I mean, okay, there we go. And like I said, doesn't really matter that.
According to Joystick Stick U, Tony Hawk's Shred Season coming to iOS.
Huh. I don't know. I mean, those are great puzzle games. So, yeah. So if you would like to participate in these in the future, and thank you everybody for participating so far, those questions usually go up on Tuesday afternoons on facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. Let's grind it up. I want to hear what half game Ben has been playing.
The grind.
Without further ado, this is the grind. We're talking about games we've been playing. Ben, go.
So I finally have a game that I've been playing since I haven't played a game in like a month.
You and me both, You and me both.
Yeah, I referenced this last week, but I got Bioshock 1 and Dead Space 2. Bioshock 1 I've played before, Dead Space 2 I have not played before, so I've been working on Dead Space 2. It's good. It's as good as I remember the first one being. It is a game that achieves what it's setting out to do very well. And by that I mean it scares the shit out of you, and you have to put it down somewhat frequently. But, so it's a very, very good game in that sense. I don't necessarily like playing a game that makes me feel on edge all the time. But it's a very impressive game. The art style is amazing. The upgrade system's good enough. The monsters are very monstrous. Mm-hmm. So I'm literally about halfway through this game. I don't like look ahead in games or whatever, but usually when I'm playing through a game and I want to know how far I am, I will look up like a game fact or whatever to see how many like chapters there are, to see what chapter I'm in, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I'm in about 8 of 15, so I'm about smack dab in the middle of it. Dead Space 2 is very much like Dead Space 1 in the sense that it's broken up into chapters, and at the beginning of every chapter it's like, I need to go turn this on to make this thing happen, and so you go do that, and then you have to do another task after that, and they just kind of stack that many tasks up together next to one another, and then the game's over.
Yeah.
I guess you could reduce any game to that perhaps, but yeah. It definitely has a very similar vibe to the first one. The monsters don't really make as much sense. Like, I don't know. There's like a velociraptor sort of monster in this one. And it's like whatever. It doesn't, I don't care about that. It's not like, the story's not exactly the strongest part of it. It's more the design of the game, the way that they're able to scare the shit out of you and give you enough resources to make you be able to kill everything that's charging at you. But yeah, no, it's a lot of fun though. I remember the stomping mechanic. Basically, everything in the universe you stomp on.
Yep.
Whether it's an enemy to finish them off or a box to get goods.
Silent Hill 2, you.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
because clearly that's how engineering works.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I love how so like in the first game you have a plasma cutter, which is just like an engineering tool that you have, over the course of doing your job. Because like Gordon Freeman, you're just a cog in the machine, right? However, in this, you like the primary opening chapter of the game has you without a weapon, and you break into a medical bay, like in the course of trying to escape from all this madness. And you have to jerry-rig a plasma cutter out of a medical, like a surgeon bot.
Yeah,
yeah.
And somebody is gruesomely murdered in the background.
Well,
too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in a Dead Space game, you can always pretty much rest assured that somebody's getting gruesomely murdered somewhere.
It's pretty comical, man. Like any person in a cutscene, it's like, well, you're not going to make it to the end of this cutscene.
Oh no! You have a voice.
Yeah, if you're on a video feed, you're fine. But if you're in person, sorry, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the way of Dead Space. Yeah. They've introduced a few new like monsters. As I said, there's like Velociraptor ones, those or whatever. Yeah. There's like children ones, which is like equally disturbing as Last of Us, where it's like, all right, murdering children, whatever.
Okay,
you know.
No big deal.
But on top of that, there's baby ones.
Yeah.
Wait, there are babies like, in the previous game.
There are. These ones are slightly different. These look like footballs, but if you shoot them in the football part, they explode. So,
yeah.
There you go.
You saying the Velociraptor ones actually reminds me, like, it's super, like, it's a bummer. I like those enemies because, like, they are, like, AI superstars. However, you walk into an environment and you can, like, you know immediately, oh, I'm going to fight these Velociraptors because they're just a bunch of crates stacked around.
Yeah, yeah, there's that, yeah. But they make no sense. Like, what are they? What did they morph from? Were there dinosaurs before the virus got there? You know, like
chronologically, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. They must have found some bones and
I don't know.
So this is like one of the strengths of like Half-Life, right? Is like that the monster is evolving along with you, and so that's where the challenge comes from.
Yeah.
Whereas in Dead Space 2, they just kind of make up new characters that have better AI, but there's not a strong explanation for why they're there. You know. So I don't know. Playing this game is fun if you like to increase your heart rate, but I don't know. I mean, it's a beautiful game. Like,
oh, for sure.
Every environment is just so well realized and just like, I don't know, pretty gorgeous. Yeah. And like, even if it's like dark and murky and stuff, every environment is very, very pretty.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they reuse a lot of level designs. I can't count the number of times I walk down a hallway. Halfway down the hallway, there's an elevator to your right. Mm-hmm. Like, there's... Yeah. For some reason, they recycle a lot of that. So, that's a very small pet peeve. But, I don't know.
Although, I mean, are you in wherever the ship's called, the Normandy or
this
33?
And this is something that, like, I feel like the game really succeeds at, is that it takes place in a civilian center as opposed to a military installation.
Yes.
So, like, it kind of feels like a... like if this crazy alien fungus outbreak took place in, you know, the world of Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know?
And yes. So I've heard it build this way too, where it's like, oh, you see the infection spread, you know?
Not really. You still get out there in the aftermath.
Well, so what I was kind of disappointed by is like, there's one scene in particular where like you hear a lot of noise of people, like as if they're like running and screaming from the monsters or whatever, you don't see a single person though. And it's just like, it's still as isolated as the first game is, but they try and make it seem as if it's not, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least they tried to not make it that way, but unfortunately it doesn't seem like it succeeds so far.
Do they do they have some new version of the zero gravity sections?
Yeah, they redid the controls. So instead of you like pointing to an area and leaping towards it, there's like a hover mode essentially where you turn on like jets that he has. It's like a jet pack or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it still is disorienting where you can still turn yourself around, but they included a button that will right himself up because I think they realized.
See, that seems unfortunate to me.
Why?
Because it seems to me like that was one of the. I'll say like Dead Space does nothing for me. That seemed like the one redeeming part to me was
the disorientation.
Like, yeah, well, and just those segments where it's just like playing with the whole the enemy's gate is down. Like suddenly there's no perspective.
Well, those segments are still really successful in that is their excuse to like just turn off scale as a consideration. So they put you in really interesting environments that couldn't be plausible in a, like, for lack of a better word, Euclidean geometry paradigm. So
drinking some Cthulhu.
Oh, God damn it. God damn it, David. No, but I mean, like,
Cole just lost 7 minutes of his life due to stress.
Yeah. Well, that's just counting down, man. As it is for us all. No, I still consider those to be like really good encounter based kind of things, specifically because they also like restrict your oxygen in a lot of those situations. So okay. It's a lot
Did
of you
they do
looking
that in the
for
first one?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's cool that they kept that.
Yeah.
So they do have spider bad guys in this too, David, as they did in the first one, which. Normally, I'm immune to that, but man, not in this game, man. It's,
yeah.
See, that
I wasted many a clip.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Well, it's spiders mixed with body horror, so it works pretty well.
Yeah.
Doubly terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I still think horror is cheap.
Well, it's hard to claim bullshit because it's a horror game, right? They're trying to make you
the
terrified.
The problem is there's smart horror and there's dumb horror. And this
is by no means psychological horror. This is at the opposite end of the spectrum of Silent Hill, you know?
But what I'm saying is, like, there's a difference between, like, here's something that people are just, like, inherently, certain segments of the population are inherently afraid of versus, like, here's something that's scary because, like, we have a story behind why it should be scary or because it's dangerous or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Most spiders are dangerous. That's why people think that they're scary.
But they're not.
Well, I mean, why are you scared of them, you baby? No.
Because I don't like spiders.
Yeah,
like,
that fucking sucks. Nobody likes spiders except for, like, weird goth kids. You're right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I enjoy it. It's fun. I will beat it in a week or two, I imagine. Yeah. But yeah. So I mean, if you haven't played the games, I mean, they are good. And as I said before, it definitely achieves what it sets out to do. And basically, any game that can do that and is that well realized, I think, is worth playing.
Yeah.
So.
One thing I did want to throw in, aside from insensitive remarks about arachnophobia, is sorry, David, the last third of that game is fantastic. Like, it takes a dip into a very satisfying narrative ground. So I think that, like, if you're not impressed by what it's doing right now, like around the midway mark, like it is a rare, kind of action based. Narrative game that actually gets stronger as it approaches like the stuff it's trying to say.
Cool.
Yeah. So
good.
I'm very curious to hear what you say.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else, man?
That is all I've been grinding on.
Yeah, cool.
I think after this, I'll probably start on BioShock. Cool. BioShock 1. So.
David, how about you?
Sure. I actually inspired by, Ben, I downloaded BioShock 1 again, although I've not gotten enough into it to really say much. Unfortunately, I'm in a weird place where I don't like the core. Like, I don't like survival horror games, so I don't like kind of the core thing that BioShock's doing. and I've already played half the game. So, like, the first half is half a game I just don't want to play until I can get to the second half where I start caring about the story again. So that's going to be a thing. But the big thing I've been doing, I finally spent some money on Fallen London. So I finally gave in and stopped freeloading.
Okay.
It's basically just they have several points where you can spend $5 to like open up a side quest that just like fills in more of the story. So I did some of that. I'm really you know, the game's really where I'm in. It's starting to pick up where it's starting to you're starting to realize a lot of the significance of some, you know, some of the story elements.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, one of the examples is like real early on when I started the game, you know, I started suffering from you know, reoccurring dreams of like mirrors where like, you know, the character would like you know, have dreams where he fought, you know, the mirror, the reflection in the mirror moves and then you move instead of the other way around. Or, you know, just like things where like the mirror, you know, isn't your reflection, you know, just weird things like that. And then, you know, later on you start getting into, you know, some oblique references to out of the corner of your eye seeing like weird flashes of lights in mirrors. And then once you get kind of to the mid game, on the, you know, you get the whole thing with the whole, you know, spiders teleporting through mirrors, and you get to this area where, basically there's this giant, you're guarding this giant, zoo full of people that, you know, they insist are dangerous, and whatever you do, don't let you know, don't let mirrors near them. So they do a lot of things where, you know, sprinkled throughout the game are all these kind story elements that weave together into a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So it's starting to get really good. It's, you know, starting to get much more compelling. The other thing I've been doing, I downloaded, I don't know if you guys have seen on Steam, have you, Fistful of Frags was released, I believe, last week?
Real quick, I just have one last question about, like, Fallen London.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do you get the sense that they're trying to maintain a narrative that they can continue to kind of, like, pump along? Or are they working towards something bigger? Or is it more of like a, like an episodic, like, here is our story for this quarter kind of thing?
It's actually kind of weird in that there's really no narrative.
Okay.
It's much more, and this is part of why I feel like every time I talk about it, I can't quite describe what makes the game so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it's much more, you know, they've created this, you know, this huge world, and, you know, there's all these different, you know, concepts and factions and substances,
yeah,
and inventions.
It's scenarios. It's like scenario,
yeah,
writing.
Well, and then a lot of the payoff is, you know, they'll just pitch these at you and won't really explain them. And so it's over the course of the game kind of working out their significance.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one of them is, like, one of the kind of sub-stories is, you know, the Great Game, where it's basically all the various major countries, Victorian era countries, are, you know, sending spies to London to, you know, to kind of figure out what's going on in the underworld. And so there's no actual narrative that's like, oh, here's, you know, this story of spycraft. It's more just like, as you're going along, you know, maybe you'll need some information, so you'll go talk to a spy, or you might just, you know, in the course of robbing a building, you know, happen to observe some spycraft going on. So it's more just a thing that's there that the story kind of weaves in and out of, and so you work together and kind of build up your knowledge of the world.
Hmm. Yep, I like that stuff too. Like just where it's inferred knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean it's very effectively done. Mm-hmm. They pull on a lot of kind of Lovecraftian themes, you know, stuff like that to kind of get sort of that sort of kind of gothic horror vibe. So it's very well done. I also found out it's kind of cool. Pretty much all of the locations are actually based on actual like locations in Victorian era London, which is pretty cool. So like all the streets they reference and you know most all the landmarks and I guess a lot of the people and things.
All of the bars that are named after the animals on the sign.
Yeah, yeah, and stuff like that. Although apparently they have admitted and asked forgiveness because they screwed up and named Hyde Gardens after Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, even though that wasn't written till after the time period in which the game is set.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, Hyde Park has been a thing since Hyde, so... I mean, since before Hyde, like, that's a very old kind of area in the world, so...
Yeah, although apparently they named it after Dr. I don't know.
Really?
I've never been to London, so I don't know. But
yeah, and I'm basing that off of the fact that I live in Hyde Park. So
oh, fair enough. But yeah. So there's just lots of cool elements, and they do a lot of neat plays on things like that. So like they have their equivalent of Sherlock Holmes, mm-hmm. except that's like an elderly black lady.
Cool.
So they do a lot of things where they kind of like riff on things where, you know, they'll do like things that are definitely like, here's this element of like the Victorian stick that we need to do, but here's our way of doing it.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of neat things like that.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. So the other thing I've been doing, I downloaded Fistful of Frags. It's a free game on Steam, free as in beer. It was originally a Half-Life 2 mod, and I guess there's now they ported it to a standalone source game, which, as far as I can tell, changes virtually nothing. But I mean it's now completely free. You know, a Western shooter, and kind of its big thing is it really trades on a combination of all the weapons are you know the Wild West era weapons where you know there's no semi-automatic guns, all the all the handgun or all the revolvers a single action, and they do a lot of, you know, all the weird designs of guns they had back then. So like, you know, like lever action pistols and things like that. And then the other thing that's interesting that goes along with that is that means that all of the guns generally have relatively low rates of fire unless you're fanning them. Horrible inaccuracy and atrocious reload times. So it's kind of the opposite of like the hyperkinetic Quake shooter, where it's a game where like you have to stop moving in order to shoot accurately.
Right.
And so I don't know, like it's real unique feeling. It's much more almost a finesse type of thing.
I mean, it seems more like strategic. I'm looking at a video of it on the Steam front page, and it's kind of like, oh, if you only have one shot, like, what do you have to do to make sure that matters?
Right. Exactly. And for the most part, it's a lot of fun. It works really well, and there's a lot of, I think, good features they put in. For example, the fact that you can choose to like fan a revolver to, you know, significantly increase its fire rate, but you know, at the expense of accuracy.
Yeah.
Similarly, you can dual wield. Wow. Any two single-handed weapons. So you can have, like, a sawed-off shotgun and a Colt Peacemaker.
Yep.
Stuff like that. So that's kind of cool. So it's a fun game. It does have a pretty significant learning curve. And I would say...
I mean, is that because of complexity of control, or is that because of just kind of like the possibility space it offers?
I would say it's actually two things. One, they don't necessarily do a good job of explaining all of the concepts that are in play.
Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, they don't do an incredibly good job of you can choose to be either ambidextrous, right-handed, or left-handed.
Oh, that's too many systems, man.
And basically what that is ambidextrous, you're, you know, pretty good at everything and you're the best at dual wielding. Right-handed is you're fairly accurate having a single gun in your right hand and you're the most accurate when you're fanning. And then left-handed is you're the most accurate you can possibly be when you only have one gun, but you're inaccurate dual wielding or fanning.
Right.
So it's basically, you know, how do you want to use your gun? But they don't really explain that.
So, like, as opposed to calling that, like, ambidextrous, right-handed, or left-handed, they should call it, like, are you single-wielding, rapid-fire, or dual-wielding? like, that would be the way. And then just the handedness would be something that is just a side effect of that.
True. Although, I think some of that, like, obviously, the way they do that is, you know, literally, if you do left-handed, you hold the gun in your left hand. And I think some of that is getting into... The game trades very heavily on, like, Wild West motifs. Mm-hmm. So, like, it really tries to pull in. Like, you do a lot of just the little flourishes that go along with that. So, like, the flip reloads and... Yeah, you heal by drinking whiskey. So I think that's part of where some of that comes from, is they tend to err on the side of making Wild West-style-y things.
Uh-huh.
But I can definitely see that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, service of the motif, it should take second place to, like, actually communicating what these choices do. Yeah.
And that's, unfortunately, where some of the Steam mod... comes through, unfortunately, but you know, it is what it is, and it's getting better.
Yeah.
The other kind of sort of problem is their way of approaching balance is much more old school in terms of
disregarding it.
Well,
for the better of the game,
they're old school. No. They don't care about balance.
I would say they do more the whole, like, we're going to balance it based on, like, making things hard to do.
Yeah.
So, like, it's really hard to, you know, this gun has a single shot and only iron sights, but because of that, it's a one-shot kill.
Right.
And I feel like that's understandable and that's not awful. The problem is... That then means as soon as you get someone who has enough experience to routinely overcome the difficulty, they just become totally unstoppable.
Right.
So, like, I will say it's a game that it does a little bit make me respect why modern shooters are the way they are.
Yeah.
Although it's still worth playing. The other big thing that's kind of cool is their... the only game mode I've been able to find so far is Team Deathmatch.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is there's four teams. So that's just kind of an interesting variant on it.
Watching this just kind of makes me think, like, 10 years ago, this would have been Action Half-Life.
Right.
Did you ever play that?
Oh, yeah. I never actually played it. I saw it, but no, I know what you mean.
It was fantastic, just because it was like, oh, let's turn Half-Life Deathmatch into a John Woo movie. And so it did stuff like that, like Fear would do a couple years later, like, you know, like adding in dives and such. But like, you could just have these, you know, you could dual wheel blunderbusses,
which just, you can, yeah.
So just kind of like, oh, let's like play this over the top and just have you do this thing. You know, 10 years ago, this would have been a thing you had to download as an executable and just run and hope that GameSpy would help you find a, you know, find a match. But this
And that's
is...
what this was, actually, like...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like, this was originally a mod for Half-Life 2.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it looks like it. Like, I mean, this isn't me talking shit, but the production values are kind of low, which is fine. Like, if the play is there, that's cool, but...
Yeah, they took I believe a couple of the weapon animations from Half-Life 2, although they've also added a lot of weapon animations.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I'm interested, if only because I want to kill somebody on a riverboat.
Yes, and that level actually my favorite thing of that is one of the abilities you're kind of like single button melee is a kick that can like punt people back several feet.
Nah.
And one of the awards is for punting someone either into fire and killing them, or like into water and killing them, or like off a cliff.
Yep.
So there's one game where I simply play the entire game standing on the deck and punting people overboard. So, and that's something where I'm hoping it stays this way. It's a game that's, the points you get for a kill depend on what weapon you use, with more difficult weapons, giving you more points, and that's what determines who wins.
Mm-hmm.
So it encourages you to just kind of play around.
Yeah.
So, like, you'll pretty much routinely, like, usually, I'd say a fifth to a quarter of the players in a match are just going straight up fisticuffs.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, that's cool. Like, put the incentives where the fun is. Like,
right, exactly.
That, like, it's so obvious, but, like, just do that.
Exactly. And, yeah. And I love, there's actually one of the sub-weapons you can select is just called Gentleman, and your character gets a top hat and then gets, like, bonus points for killing someone with fisticuffs.
Nice.
So yeah, it's definitely a game. I think it's also a one-man show, but, you know, it's very much a labor of love, and I think that shows.
Cool. Yeah, I'm curious. It's multi-platform, so I might check it out. Yeah, so I'll pick up right now and say that I haven't been playing much aside from Alpha Protocol.
Which we could talk about, because I've played Alpha Protocol.
Totally, yeah. So, like, I don't feel bad, like, bringing it up, because I know that you told me to play it a long time ago. In fact, I bought it audibly on the air when you recommended it, and then I just proceeded not to play it until it was a prerogative to do it for a show. But holy shit, dude, this game is amazing.
It's pretty cool.
It's so good. Like,
especially if you play it now, you can just pretend that it's like a PS1 game, and it's great.
I don't even think the graphics are fine. Like, it's just that the play isn't there. And so, like, what initially turned me off of it, so people who've been listening for, like, forever, and, like, if you were listening in the DTR days, then God bless you. But, like, I didn't like it because, like, I didn't think the play was there. Like, you know, I saw the dialogue system for what it was. Mm-hmm. It was, like, you know, this was a year after, like, Mass Effect, so I really, really wanted to get into it. But, like, the shooting and the stealth, like, no. But, like, all it takes is sufficient points in those things for it not to be an issue. So I just put as many points as possible into stealth and pistol. And so I can walk around and knock out all the enemies in stealth. And like any ones that I don't, I can just go into burst fire and mark them for death, like in a Splinter Cell game, and I'm fine. So the combat sequences, those are a non-issue now. But, like, I'm really, really digging the spy story kind of thing to it. Like, picking my allegiances and, you know, managing relationships, and like positive relationships aren't necessarily good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's good.
It's an Obsidian game, so it's like it's fantastic for role playing. As a game, like from a technical standpoint, it's all right.
It's all right. It's cool. It's cool. It's all right.
It's less buggy than their other ones, so it's fine.
Yeah. No, and like, and, you know, like nothing is a showstopper. You know, like I take some issues with some of the like the keypad hacking game. Like it's fine, but the actual hacking, computer hacking game is like it seems specifically designed to circumvent the way that I process visual information.
Is that the one where you have to find like which of these paths goes to the exit?
That's the keypad hacking game, which I can do fine. Like that, like that's more like you can just kind of tell what patterns they're going to use. The hacking one is where like this string of five numbers on this, I think like 25x10 grid. Like of flashy numbers is standing still. Like find the ones that are standing still and
go. Have you tried crossing your eyes?
Oh, I've tried it. No, trust me. Like I've tried doing the magic eye thing. It doesn't work.
Okay, because that's how you do that in like coding and stuff.
Oh man, like how do you do that? Ugh. Yeah, but I'm getting around it. Again, no showstoppers, but I'm really digging the story in spite of the terrorist in spite of what I as of. You know, at like up to this point, perceive as terrible voice acting, specifically from the main character.
Is it like the like my voice is made out of sandpaper because I'm a tough guy voice?
No, it actually is kind of the opposite. Like it's okay. So it seems like the voice actor for Michael. You know, you can do whatever you want with him to a certain extent. Like, you can be, you know, overly aggressive. You can be suave. You can be professional. Like, you know.
Actually, have you read any of the backstory, the them basing that on what they call the three Bs?
Was it Bond, Bourne?
Bond, Bauer, and Bourne?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I find that entertaining.
Yeah. And, like, playing this game makes me want to, like read more spy fiction.
Sure.
You know, like just kind of like, and you know, I'll take recommendations from everybody, obviously. But like, it's fantastic, like the way they let you approach these situations. So because they're expecting him to do all of those, I can't say that they could have found an actor who could have done all of them believably. But what they did was find somebody who couldn't do any of them.
I feel like, for example, Mass Effect does a pretty good job of getting the range of responses.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's pretty much binary, you know?
So binary is cool. Once you get to trinary, you're done.
Yeah, yeah. Once you get to tertiary, it's too much.
So he just can't. Wait, how can you not do any of them? Like, I feel like one of those has to be like. Is this person able to speak? I feel like one of those, like, human communication would have to fall into.
Like, one of them. Okay, so it seems like the default one is suave. Like, the, you know, okay. Like, I'm going to try and, like, fast talk you, sweet talk you, whatever. Which works fine, like, because that is the one that he kind of falls into. But, like, whenever you're, I don't know. And it seems, like, kind of stupid because the writing was what matters, and the writing is there. But, like, that is one way, like... And that is one way in which this falls short of what Mass Effect set out, which is I feel like most of the performances, especially in like Mass Effect 2, hold up better than this one in particular does. I mean, it's more admirable that they wrote those different situations and took everything into account in like a staggering degree than, you know, it's more admirable that they did that than they, you know, hired somebody who could, you know, who could deliver on that. However, I still feel it is a valid thing to say about the product that was shipped.
Sure.
That was like, oh, like, you know, given the thing that they shot for, they couldn't quite deliver on it in quite the way that I, as somebody who's trying to enjoy a story as it's presented, would, you know, would really value. Right.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's a very weak criticism. in that. Like, I like what came out of it, but you know, and it gets better. Like, it's like one thing about being inconsistent is some places are going to be much better than others, and the places where it's good are really good.
So, how far into the game are you?
So I've done two of the three quest hubs as of the time of this recording. I've done Taipei and Rome, and I'm going through Moscow at this point.
Okay, cool.
Wait, is this Rome as in, like, the Vatican?
I don't know about the Vatican. It's, like, just more straight-up Italy, from what I've seen.
Okay.
There's there is a very suspicious gelato salesperson. Ben's laughing. He knows.
So is it sort of like the original Deus Ex, where, like, very freeform, like, you can do whatever you want?
It's like Knights of the Republic, where it opens up at a certain point. Yeah.
It is. It is more open than Deus Ex is. Like, Deus Ex takes you through kind of the quest hubs in sequential order. And I would say, yes, it is. It is very much Knights of the Old Republic-esque in that, like, once you
I'm
get to...
I'm talking Deus Ex 1, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, the first one, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I know that Human Revolution is more like this game, but this game predated that, so holla. but yeah, it is, it, like, Ben is absolutely right. It is more like Knights of the Old Republic than Deus Ex. But there are, you know, quest hubs, and, you know, if there is a comparison to the first Deus Ex, it's that, you know, when you get to a quest hub, you're given missions in different orders. Like, you can kind of say, like, what do I want to prioritize, getting leads or kind of infiltrating places? And the, you know, the sequence that you do things in will affect the way that the other missions turn out. So the allies that you expose in one area might help you in a different place, whereas if you went to them first, they would have probably fought against you.
See, that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, the big thing I remember in Deus Ex was, like, when you could just, like, kill your allies if they, like, told you to do something you didn't want them to do.
Most of your explicit... Go ahead.
Hey, you should wash your hands after you go to the bathroom.
Oh. Hey, you shouldn't be in the women's bathroom. Well, there's just no common ground here. Bang, bang, bang. Yeah. But... oh, man. Yeah. So, like, most of your allies are, you know, voices on a radio, so it's hard to do that.
It's hard to kill them.
Yeah. But,
we can't always go Spec Ops the line on them.
Kind of. But there's a fantastic, like, relationship, you know, kind of thing, wherein, like, you know, people who are, like, explicitly your allies in a particular mission, like, the voice in your ear, can give you perks depending on like how well you're liked by them, and if you are disliked by them. So if you are, like, the difference between trusted and distrusted, you know, it's pretty big. However, you get equally good perks for being in a different direction. So you're primarily your primary handler throughout the game. If you get her to hate you, you still benefit from a gameplay perspective, but it's an entirely different way.
Yeah. And that's something you can watch, like, interviews with Chris Avellan, but that was one of the goals of the game, was that he wanted to make you could roleplay it so that you could piss people off and still have fun with the game.
Yeah, and that's something that's kind of sad, because, like, in the tutorial, like what's his name from Alpha Protocol himself, Jimmy Alpha Protocol says, like, yeah, if you're you know, trying to, like, get one over on somebody, you can just intentionally piss them off so they'll be reckless in combat. Like, I'm not at the end, I haven't seen that, but I would so love that to be the case, because that is another twist on dialogue being used to win in combat, which is, like, you know, I may not be able to talk you into killing yourself like the end of every Fallout game or Mass Effect, but it will, like, just piss you off so bad that you're going to be reckless and you'll be easier to fight, right?
Yeah.
And I haven't seen that delivered on like it was promised in the intro, which is fine. That's a pretty fine...
You should have already.
I mean, it's not going to spoil anything. This game is, you know, 5 years old, but...
Rome? You can do it in Rome, yeah.
Which particular
you
person?
You can totally piss off the Pope.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. He gets reckless. He says everything's okay. No, I don't...
Oh, no, Marburg?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Cool. Yeah, I... You know what? I think I did, because I didn't take his bait. Is that what it takes?
There's only one boss fight in Rome, so yeah. That boss fight you can throw that person's game off by taunting them.
Did you do Rome first? Because I know that if you take Moscow first, you can get an ally against them.
I did Rome last. I did
Rome
Moscow
last.
First.
Okay,
yeah.
So I think that might be so. I didn't take his bait, and I taunted him because, hey, you're a jerk. But I think that I think specifically if you take Moscow first and you ally with C, then you can actually get the dossier information on him that lets you really piss him off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean that's spoilers, but it's enough of like abstraction that anybody who hasn't played it will have forgotten it by the time they play. So,
yep.
Yeah. So. I know you're sensitive. Don't worry.
Did that game just die? Did it kind of do the cult classic thing, or has there been any talk of like doing sequels?
It went cult classic.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. Well, I mean, good that was recognized eventually.
It was
unfortunate that it didn't make money when it needed to.
Yeah.
It was reviewed by a lot of people who didn't know it was an Obsidian game, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind
that
of...
That was the problem.
The Metacritic disease.
I mean, like,
these
that
graphics
is
graphics aren't good. 7.
But the graphics are fine. They're okay.
Yeah.
And if you don't pick the beard for Thornton, what's wrong with you?
Now I'm just matching a hipster spy.
If you didn't choose the PBR for Thornton, what's wrong with you?
Oh. Yep. So do you guys want to button it up?
No.
I really don't have anything else to talk about, and I would like to go to bed, so
all right.
Okay.
Fine. Yeah.
Thank you everybody for listening to episode number 62 of The Level. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure I may not want to speak for you guys, but do you appreciate the listeners listening?
Well, it is Listener Appreciation Day, so I guess
National Listener Appreciation Day. So yeah, hooray for you. Yeah, but no, really, hooray for you. Thank you so much. And, you know, if you want to listen to more, that is duckfeed.tv/thelevel. And participate in the conversation on facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. If you want to support the network financially and monetarily, that is, you know, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And the old Amazon link on duckfeed.tv/tipjar. And I don't know. I feel like I'm hitting a lot of stuff here. Did I miss anything, you guys?
Leave us an iTunes review.
Yes. It's all cool. So, yeah. I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
You're
on
about
Twitter.
Due, aren't you?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I wait for you to remind me, and then I try and think of something.
Let me see here. So, what is our contract? Every 6 months?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Overdue. The last one was October 19th.
Oh, goodness.
It was your shot at Mumford & Sons, which, looking at the entirety of your toot history on one screen, mm-hmm. is the only at mention you've ever made.
Yeah, pretty aggressive of me, too. Yeah, I don't know how I can follow it up. Yeah.
Well... Apparently, almost everyone on Twitter talks about winning. That's like pretty much perpetually the most common hashtag.
Oh, God.
So that might be a place to start.
Are you kidding me? That is so dismal, David. Like, are people
so Twitter's,
like...
Twitter's the equivalent of Charlie Sheen on the internet?
No, Twitter's the equivalent of Charlie Sheen in 2011. God damn, guys.
Oh, basically, what I had to do for a final project in one of my classes, for like a month and a half, they captured all Twitter data that was from either mentioned the president of the university, was within like a certain number of miles of Cincinnati, or mentioned a dog.
Yeah.
And one
or,
of the things...
Or
like any of those things.
Okay.
So it was like many gigabytes of data.
Yeah.
And so I went through and analyzed like the hashtags, and I broke it down by day of the week and then hour of the day. And for each of those, the most common hashtag was always either dog or winning, which dog being obvious because we explicitly picked things that talked about dogs, which leads me to believe that it's basically always winning.
I'm trying to figure out who in their, like, okay, right mind is a little bit strong. Who would hashtag a Twitter post dog?
How was it spelled, David?
D-O-G.
If it was D-A-W-G, I could give them the benefit of the doubt because that is sweet.
I also, I found out, I'm kind of excited, in the Old English, I believe it is, dog is spelled doge.
And baby is spelled babby. So before we do this,
no, it's really weird, like, messing with that, like, not even getting at, like, privacy thing. It's a really weird, like, voyeuristic-esque feeling, because, like, just like, get, you know, like, getting tweets where, like, you know, I'll just be doing, like, checks, and, like, the tweet will come up where just be, like, you know, someone, like, repeatedly, like, dropping the N-word. No. Like, just, you know, just, like, really weird, like, seeing, like, this is what people are talking about.
Yeah, they're being horrible monsters. All right, guys, before we sign off, I need you to weigh in on the title, all right? Because I have no bearing for what it is. So I have three options. Let's just lay it out. Let's decide it right now, and I will sign off with it. So option one, it's plays all the way down. Option two, there will be coins. And option three, hashtag dog, D-A-W-G.
I don't know. Didn't we already have a There Will Be Pigs episode?
Oh, you know what? We did. Fuck.
So I would go with hashtag dog, personally.
Okie dokie.
Although I would cut it off before we got into talking about race.
No, it's fine. I already put the marker. It's good. Oh, man. So, hashtag all your tweets, dog.
What I've always wanted to do for a vacation is go to a Chinese buffet and see how long I could be there before they kicked me out.
I don't know, I think if you brought enough changes of clothes, you'd be okay.
I'd just become like an attraction.
Would you like leave when they close up for the night?
Only if they threw me out.
All right.
Man, these sequels to Night at the Museum are just getting lazier and lazier.
Watch Dogs. Oh, yeah, they want. Why would I pre-order?
I'm just waiting for the Watch Doge remake. Wow, such hack.
So Chicago.